Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for this valuable opportunity to share my research with you. My presentation is based on my dissertation on collaboration among HIV service agencies. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Jill Mosteller, who is a faculty member on my thesis advisory committee. She can't be in this room right now because at this exact moment she's making another presentation from the same overall study in the convention center. So I have no relationships to disclose. And to set the background, collaboration among health and human service agencies has a long history. It is known by many different words such as coalitions, alliances, intersectoral health and human partnerships, transdisciplinary groups. But basically, it's agencies coming together to work so that client needs can be met. And in recent years, it has been especially encouraged and even mandated by policymakers so that clients that have diverse needs can be served by the system, because no agency alone can serve all these needs. And especially in the field of HIV and AIDS, it's especially important that agencies work together, because patients that are HIV positive have needs that go beyond medical care. These include psychosocial needs, needs for emergency financial assistance, there's often a need for substance abuse treatment, and other adversities that often go along with the HIV infection. In Baltimore especially, a lack of collaboration has been cited often as a major barrier to how patients are served, and it's been termed as a priority area for action. And yet we have relatively little data on current patterns of collaboration and the challenges that agencies experience in working amongst themselves. So the study was designed to come up with some key findings that could address this problem. I conducted semi-structured interviews with key respondents from 21 Baltimore HIV agencies. These included units of the local health department, medical care agencies, agencies that provided faith-based counseling, agencies that worked on substance abuse, agencies whose sole task was to provide volunteers to other agencies. So the whole gamut I tried to capture, and a thematic analysis was conducted. Going on to the results, first I tried to explore what the meaning of collaboration was to agencies. So as this quote explains, when I think of collaboration, I think of working with an outside agency or company for services either that we don't have in-house, or sometimes it's so that they could access our services. Maybe they have clients that we are interested in marketing to, and so it's usually an exchange between two organizations or agencies around a particular service or a client. And the last few words here are key, that it's usually an exchange between two organizations or agencies around a particular service or a client. So what's driving collaboration is this very operational need of how do we serve this task at hand. It's not driven by what are the needs of the city as a whole or what are the needs of the system as a whole, and I'll speak about this more later. Smaller agencies were more likely to collaborate than bigger agencies, and a prime reason for this was that many big agencies had many services for clients in-house, so they had a lesser need to go out and refer clients. Agencies also expressed that their patterns of collaboration were changing a little now as clients were surviving longer and had needs other than simply survival. So, for instance, there were now greater needs to collaborate for skills training so that clients could get jobs. Agencies expressed that there were many advantages to collaboration. So for clients could get multiple needs served. They also had a choice of care facilities. So, for instance, clients could choose to receive case management at one agency that collaborated with another agency and get medical care at the second agency. And agencies expressed that working together like this increased the confidence that clients had in the system. This helped clients look upon the system as a caring system in which their needs would be met. For agencies, there were direct advantages in qualifying to receive grant funding. So, for instance, if you have a community-based agency A that wants to apply for a grant in which they need to demonstrate that they have access to a medical provider, they could still apply for this grant if they collaborated with another agency and had a medical provider come in a few days a week and offer medical services at their office. Working together also strengthened interagency relationships, and it created a stronger base for advocacy. So if you had agencies that had different specializations, different areas they worked in, but if they came together and advocated in a strong voice, that had a different impact upon policymakers than an agency working alone. Agencies also expressed numerous barriers to collaboration, and while there was a lot of variability in what was expressed, these were the main themes that came up. So the different standards of care were a barrier to collaboration, and these could be, depending on your perspective, very interesting or very mundane, something like the shoes you wear. So for instance, one federally qualified healthcare agency explained to me that workplace safety demanded that they wear closed-toed shoes. And this actually became a sticking point when they were trying to collaborate with another community-based agency that did not have such rules. And because they could not change their procedural manual, and this agency, because of its federal qualifications, needed to have this rule, they decided to not go ahead with the collaboration. On a deeper level, you have different standards in and different philosophies in what you think clients need. So take substance abuse, for instance, which is a major problem in Baltimore. There are agencies that work very strongly with a harm reduction approach. They try to work with clients even if clients relapse. They continue to work with them so that clients can ultimately get rid of this problem. However, you have other agencies that have strict rules that if you test thrice, if your urine tests positive for drug use, then we would not be able to serve you. So they basically kick the client out. And so that's a barrier in agencies trying to work together when the underlying philosophy is so different. Official hurdles is something we can all identify with. As one respondent explained, that when two agencies come together to work, it's not that the bureaucratic hurdles get doubled, they actually get exponentiated. Information scarcity referred to both scarcity of timely information and correct information. So for instance, there's one agency that explained that they work with the Department of Corrections, and when people are released from prison, they get them into care and, you know, get them into the services that they need. However, they often get incorrect information about when a person is going to be released. So a person is expected to be released on Thursday, actually gets released on Monday, and a valuable opportunity for getting this person into care is lost, and they're lost to the system of care. Territorial issues and culture of working solo. There are issues about this is a zip code in which I serve my clients, why are you coming taking them? And so another agency that offers a partnership may be looked upon as suspicion. In some cases, it's just the culture of working solo. That's how they've been funded. That's how they've always been working. And that act ends up being a barrier. Time scarcity, small agency size, and funding scarcity were key in another sense, and I will explain that. Time scarcity and the scarcity of funding was most often cited by people as a barrier. So for instance, you have one respondent that said, one of the problems is that everything has to be done yesterday. It starts with the federal government, they dump this money out, and you have to get all these things done in some ridiculous amount of time. So what are you going to do? You sure as hell are not going to work with somebody whose track record you don't know. You're going to try to give the money to the people that you know can get the work done, or keep it yourself, because it's far easier doing it yourself than have somebody else to do it. And so even though agencies want to collaborate, these very practical issues become a barrier. Agency size, if you recall in a previous slide, I said smaller agencies were more likely to collaborate than the bigger agencies. But ironically, it's the small size that becomes a barrier to collaboration. And as this code explains, the big boys don't want to play with the little boys because they're a liability in terms of their ability to maintain the service, do the service, sustain the service, have the appropriate licensures, insurance. We have organizations that are so small that they're working from month to month. And it's risky to collaborate on a one-on-one with somebody who's dealing from month to month in terms of an agency, because they can be under at any time. And if I may just borrow from Lynn's presentation, when she showed you this slide with 50% of the cost going to personnel and, you know, operational issues, that's very hard for small agencies. And then, you know, it's very hard for bigger agencies to collaborate with small agencies when the scales are so different And ironically, it's the small agencies that need to collaborate more. And funding scarcity appeared both as a barrier and a facilitator. Most people said it was a barrier because funding cuts meant that they had to lay off staff, which meant that they had fewer resources to share with other agencies and offer them help. There were some respondents that said that this was a facilitator because now that they were getting a cut in funding, they were forced to go out of their comfort zone and collaborate with other agencies so that their clients' needs could be served. Principal facilitators, money talks. So the incentive of receiving grants was a major incentive for working together, as I gave the example that agencies could qualify to receive grant funding if they demonstrated collaboration. There were some that went on to say that if money was not in the picture, agencies would actually not collaborate. Baltimore also has the advantage that most agencies are long-standing historical providers that have a good reputation, that are known to the community and other agencies. So these personal relationships and agency reputations were an important facilitator of collaboration. And finally, HIV/AIDS forums and meetings, by which I mean, for instance, the local planning council meeting that's held every month, or the Ryan White providers sub-grantee meetings that are held quarterly. These are forums in which agencies, they might be competing with each other, but they come together, they hear each other, they swap notes, they realize they're on the same side, and you know, they come up with strategies that they could advocate with policymakers for their needs. So finally, I just want to summarize that barriers to collaboration range from structural, procedural, professional, and financial, and many of these are interconnected. So for instance, if you have the different standards of care, agencies are aware of that, but they do not have the time and they do not have the finances to address those. So you have not just one barrier, but two barriers that are linked and are sort of synergistically increasing the impact. And I want to leave you with two key points. I'm often asked about my study, so do agencies want to collaborate with each other? I would say yes, agencies perceive collaboration positively, but funding cuts affect their abilities to collaborate. So for all this impetus that policymakers now have that agencies have to collaborate, they really need to address the other side of funding cuts because that is a major barrier to interagency collaboration. My second key point for you is agencies collaborate around their needs. If you remember in the first slide when I was talking about the meaning of collaboration, I said it's normally an exchange around a particular agency's need or a particular client's need. What is really needed is for focus on the city's needs. When Baltimore perhaps has 69,000 people that need to be in care, it's consistently among the top five most affected HIV/AIDS metropolitan areas in the country. And so the implication really is that agencies and funders and policymakers really need to initiate a dialogue about how the city's needs can be addressed. And I'm going to leave you with a quote that explains this. This is a medical care provider that also has services for emergency financial assistance and nutritional assistance and other things. So this person said, well, I've got everything I need here, I just don't have substance abuse. Well, that's an agency need, but the city needs much more. The city needs a bigger focus, you know. The agency has more of a myopic focus of, I need this funding so I can keep on doing this. The city needs all these entities to work together around some higher purpose than the day-to-day function of the agency. So thank you very much for your attention, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you.